live pictures from Benghazi. And of course, gunfire, fireworks, cheering is what we're seeing right now. Flags of pre-Gaddafi era waving amongst the many hundreds of people that have gathered there in its central square to actually rejoice at what they've been able to hear. Very concerned in the past 24 hours that Gaddafi forces may have been encroaching on their positions and on the safe areas that they had deemed would be suitable for them to at least hold out until the international community could actually gather their thoughts and help protect them and allow them to have their voice heard, certainly. Let's just listen in to what they are saying right now. Lots of celebrations there in Benghazi. For those of you joining us here on Al Jazeera English, what you're seeing are images from Benghazi on the left in Libya, as the people there have just heard that the United Nations have voted for a no-fly zone, and on the right, Libyan state television. Let's just listen to the celebrations going on in Benghazi. For those of you joining us here on Al Jazeera, what you're seeing are continuing coverage of the Libyan uprising and the consequences of what has been a Security Council vote in favour of a no-fly zone and protection of civilian areas. On the left, you can see Benghazi and the celebrations of the local population there. On the right, what Libyan state television has been showing right now. We'll just listen in to certainly the celebrations in Benghazi.
واللي بيدي لا يديرها صور يا صور صور وقت العشاء زيرا.
This 2300 GMT, you're watching Al Jazeera's special coverage of the battle for Libya. The United Nations has just voted on a resolution to use, and we quote, all necessary measures to protect Libyan civilians from the harm at the hands of forces loyal to Colonel Muammar Gaddafi. The measure allows a no-fly zone and any measures to halt attacks that might result in civilian fatalities. That, of course, doesn't rule out a possibility of military intervention. It comes as Colonel Gaddafi warned residents of Benghazi, Libya, the rebel capital, that the attack was imminent and promised lenient treatment for those who offered no resistance. Let's listen in to those celebrations in Benghazi. Well, that's the reaction of people in Benghazi as they've heard that the Security Council has now certainly supported them in their need for protection and a no-fly zone and all military needs to keep them safe across Libya. Let's cross over to Scott Heidler, our correspondent who was following events for us at the United Nations. Scott, the vote went through, but only just.
You're right, Sohail. It only just, it was kind of how it was being predicted throughout the day by our diplomatic sources here. You know, there are five abstentions by China, Russia, Germany, India, and Brazil, and then 10 votes for and no votes against. So it did pass, and it went through in pretty quick order. We had a brief statement by the French foreign minister who was here to help push this resolution through. But this is how the announcement of the final tally was read off by the ambassador from China to the Security Council, who's the rotating president. This is how he announced it.
The result of the voting is as follows. 10 votes in favor,
0
vote against, 5 abstentions.
Well, I suppose it really means all steam ahead now, but what can we expect in the certainly first few hours of this resolution being passed? What's going to happen, do you think?
Well, right now, we're still hearing speeches by the members of the Security Council essentially explaining how they voted and why they voted the way they did. Now, in the coming hours, you can imagine that there's going to be more information of exactly how the no-fly zone is going to be implemented, what the plans are for these potential military interventions, as we heard, to protect civilians. Now, one thing to note here, Sohail, this is the first time in memory that a resolution by the Security Council was based on the protection of civilians, the basis for a resolution in the Security Council. There has been a movement within the Security Council and with the United Nations toward a responsibility to protect. But never before has there been United Nations Security Council resolution based on this. So obviously we're setting precedent. They are setting precedent with this resolution. But what comes after this, as you mentioned, is the key. What's coming in the next coming hours? We know that when we heard from the French Foreign Minister Juppé speak before this, that they are going to really front what's coming next. So we'll have to hear what's going to happen as far as military intervention and this no-fly zone that's going to be implemented most definitely very, very soon, in the coming hours, as exactly how he put it.
And of course, Scott, one of the main issues was the fact it's all very well to pass these resolutions, but time is of the essence. And even at this present moment in time, and as we see those very jubilant scenes of people in Benghazi, they are not protected at the moment. So anything can happen if Colonel Gaddafi decides to act straight away.
Exactly, and that's why there needs to be, and I think that the French Foreign Minister was saying that it's a question of hours, not days, that action has to be taken. Now, one thing that to note, too, that there was still some hope that this kind of strong resolution being passed by the Security Council would deter Muammar Gaddafi from his troops from going into doing just that, particularly in Benghazi. But listening to the speech today by Muammar Gaddafi, it is very unlikely that just the passage of the Security Council resolution is going to prevent him from going forward with his promise. So right now, what the world is waiting for, and specifically those people in Benghazi that we hear still celebrating, is what's coming next? How is the international community going to step up and protect them?
It seems that this is now a two-pronged approach. You have the U.S. Ambassador Susan Rice, who was giving the United States position, talking about the fact that this whole issue has now been referred to the ICC, and that also praising the Arab League and nations there, totally supporting a Security Council resolution. It seems that those neighbours that are close by may very well be in the forefront, but we're already hearing from Egypt saying that they will not get involved in any military action. So perhaps it could be fraught with problems even before it started.
That could be an issue going down the line, and that's one thing that the French, the Americans, the British and the French have been saying, that for them to go forward with this draft resolution, there has to be Arab involvement in any military interaction. And we don't know exactly. We've been hearing rumors that there are two Arab nations who have already signed on to be part of a no-fly zone. No specifics were given. There were some possibilities. The Qatar was mentioned, the United Arab Emirates was mentioned, but we could not get confirmation from their missions here that, yes, they are in fact going to be part of any military operation over the skies of Libya or in protecting the civilians of Libya. So we don't know the details of that, but we know that the Security Council, and particularly those behind this resolution, are trying to really put forth that Arab nations are going to be behind it. But as you pointed out, Egypt, neighbor, said no, they're not going to be involved. So we'll have to see exactly how that unfolds when we see it shifting now. So that the political and legal hurdle, if you will, it has been overcome. That's the passage of this resolution in the Security Council. The next step, the military implementation of this, that's what we're going to be seeing coming in the coming hours. NATO will most definitely be involved. France, as we've heard, is going to be involved as well. But the details of that still have not been announced, Sahil.
Well, for the moment, Scott, thank you. Of course, we'll come back to you for more analysis as the day progresses. Let's cross over now to Libya. Of course, this is Benghazi on the right-hand side of the screen. You can see the shots of people there, very happy at the news. Anita McNaught is our correspondent in the capital. Anita, hard to perhaps gauge how the administration there in Tripoli is going to react to news from the United Nations Security Council.
It's very hard to get reaction when one would like it from government ministers here. They do give reaction, often at unexpected moments and in unexpected ways. But all this evening, I've been trying to get hold of people in the foreign ministry here to find out what they felt about the events that might have taken place at the Security Council. In fact, the events that have now taken place with this vote, 10 in favour, 5 abstentions. The foreign minister were too busy to talk to me, but not a spokesman, but a source close to the foreign ministry said this is only to be expected from the Security Council because we've made such gains on the ground recently. He expected, this kind of intervention. This is the kind of spoiler that he felt. The sense of isolation in Tripoli is very acute, but it also has to be noted that when you look at the voting, not just in this unprecedented Security Council vote, but the fact that unanimously there was a vote taken to impose sanction on Colonel Gaddafi. He was thrown out of the Gulf Cooperation Council earlier on. And again, the decision by the Arab League last Friday that a no-fly zone would be permissible on a regional basis. You look at how isolated he in fact is. He doesn't have that many friends left in this region anymore.
And it does seem very much like that, Anita. When Susan Rice, the ambassador to the UN, was just explaining the position from her perspective, she was talking about the fact that there would be an arms embargo, flight embargo, assets would be freezed, not just of individuals, but of the state as well, and a Libyan sanctions committee set up to make sure that anybody helping Colonel Gaddafi would also be punished. Do you think that can actually be done, knowing that in the past Colonel Gaddafi has managed to circumvent sanctions in the past?
It's not just circumvent. This is a country that knows how to batten down the hatches and plow on. This is a country that doesn't fear sanctions per se because they've lived with them for so many years. This is a country that actually doesn't care too much, or didn't used to care too much, what the international community felt about it because it felt it could still get by. The question is not whether sanctions will have an impact, not perhaps even whether a no-fly zone will have an impact. Gaddafi has had, it's been a tool that he has occasionally used, but it certainly hasn't been the key element in his military offensive that has caused the damage and pushed the rebels back. The issue I think people in Tripoli and beyond will be pondering tonight is this. What other actions are any of the world's military powers, in conjunction with partners regionally, planning to take that go beyond, it's the beyond airstrike, something that the United States hinted at earlier on today? What action will they take on the ground to tackle things like his tanks, his missile batteries, his larger artillery? It's those things that have been causing the most damage here. And it's those things that, if he is still inclined to use, perhaps they'll have to take some action against.
Well, indeed. Anita, let me just give you some information as well. We're now getting word from the Italian foreign ministry. They're actually saying, according to Reuters, they're willing to make available Air Force bases in Italy, one in particular, Zigonella in Sicily, to military forces to maintain and impose that no-fly zone. They're also willing to open up the port there for the 6th Fleet of the USA for logistical support. So it seems that the ball has started to roll. Perhaps it had rolled even before the Security Council decision. Everybody had to be in place ready, as we say, and I've been hearing that time was also of the essence.
Well, indeed it is, because while Gaddafi's forces, the Libyan army, are not at the gates of Benghazi, that is certainly from the strong signals that both the government in Tripoli and Colonel Gaddafi himself have sent out tonight. That's where they thought they were headed. Remarkable news about Italy, because Italy, of course, has been caught in the most exquisitely painful position here. Silvio Berlusconi, having been a self-described close personal friend of Muammar Gaddafi, and Italy, one of Libya's closest trading partners, with enormously lucrative business deals and a great dependence on Libyan oil. So Italy painfully caught here between political pragmatism and all the other complex political dynamics swirling around. But now it seems to have made a decision about where it stands, and that decision is an extremely constructive one.
Well, for the moment, Anita, thanks very much for bringing us up to speed on certainly the position from the Libyan capital in Tripoli. These are live pictures that you're seeing from Benghazi. Many hundreds, if not thousands, of people have gathered there in the central square on hearing news that the United Nations Security Council have passed a resolution, Resolution 1973, informing the world now that Libya has a no-fly zone and that the international community will enforce it and also protect areas where civilians need to be protected. And of course, one of those areas is Benghazi. The vote went through, 10 in favour. There were no countries against the resolution, but there were 5 abstentions, and they came from Russia and China, and they were to be expected, but also Germany, India and Brazil. Well, of course, to now digest exactly what this means, certainly from a military perspective, I'm joined now by Mark Kimmett. He's the former Deputy Director of Plans and Strategy at US Central Command, or CENTCOM. He joins me now live from Washington, D.C. Thanks for joining us live on Al Jazeera, sir. It now means that a military machine, which will involve the United States, has to get into action and start to protect the Libyan people. What can we expect, say, within the first 24 hours of this resolution being passed?
Well, frankly, I'd be quite surprised if there's any direct action against Libya in the next 24 hours. I would expect that this still has to go through a couple of more political steps, perhaps through the North Atlantic Council at NATO to get a NATO decision to execute this operation, as well as internal discussions that have to be taken by the countries. We've got an international consensus, but there needs also to be an internal consensus within those countries that have signed up for this operation.
It seems that Italy, for example, has been quick off the mark by offering the 6th Fleet a location for logistical support. Surely there must have been some behind-the-scenes negotiations, discussions or chat in preparation for a positive result in the Security Council. I find it hard to believe that everybody would be starting off at a sort of cold running block as such.
No, you're exactly right. This is what planners do. There's very little doubt that military planners have been conducting prudent military planning for the last couple of weeks in anticipation for the decision. As you said, you can't just wake up one day after a decision and put together the type of operation that is being contemplated here. This takes days and days of planners doing very meticulous planning, as well as those diplomatic discussions for basing rights, overflight rights, and other logistical requirements that are necessary to conduct an operation of this type.
As a military man yourself, sir, and knowing what you're seeing certainly on the television screens and reading about in the newspapers, does it concern you that there are still many hurdles to jump before any military action or certainly Air Force planes of an international group can be seen over the skies of Libya protecting the people? Because at the moment, these people are still vulnerable, aren't they?
Well, they are, but I think I would be even more concerned if we rushed pell-mell into an operation before it was well planned, well thought out, the implications both for the current operation and any potential future operations are considered. So it's important to do this right, it's important to do this fast, but it's also important to make sure that it is thought through so that no unintended consequences emerged that weren't foreseen.
Libya is a very large country, much larger than Iraq, which also experienced no-fly zone. From your experience and talking to colleagues in the American military, what lessons did you learn from the Iraq experience that could possibly be implemented here over Libya?
Well, for both Operation Southern Watch and Operation Northern Watch, which were conducted by the United States and coalition allies for years and years over Iraq, there were a lot of lessons that were learned with regards to how to handle movements on the ground, air defense measures, how long you could keep aircraft in the air. So I think we've got a pretty experienced coalition of nations that will know how to execute the technical aspects of a no-fly zone now that it would appear that the political concerns have been met by the international community. yet there are still dangers, and that's probably the main lesson, that you can never, ever let your guard down in a no-fly zone operation, because at any time, an unknown missile site, an unknown weapon system can knock down one of your planes.
In terms of the cooperation of an international partnership, how important, from your perspective, is it that Arab nations, through the Arab League, have wholeheartedly supported the United Nations Security Council? Has that given perhaps heart to a different way of thinking about looking after the international community in their time of need?
Well, the support of the Arab League, the support of the United Nations, and hopefully the support of the North Atlantic Council is indispensable. Rushing into this again pell-mell without the proper political conditions being set, without a consensus built not only from the large countries in the world, but also those countries most affected by the consequences of this operation, those countries within the Arab League. It was indispensable that those decisions were taken, that that support was given. Where the world might have seen the United States and other coalition allies as dragging their feet, in fact, I think in truth what they were seeing was careful deliberations to build that political consensus before we executed a military operation without the support of our publics behind us.
Well, for the moment, Mark Kimmett, really appreciate your insight and your insight to this whole event. Thank you very much for joining us from Washington. Thank you. Well, Shadi Hamid is director of the Brookings Doha Center and joins me now live in the studio. Very fast-moving events, really, from the Security Council. 24 hours, we thought, well, perhaps it may still happen, that Colonel Gaddafi was on his way into Benghazi. He's also spoken to the public at large, threatened them with violence for those that are against him. Security Council have voted now to protect the civilians. It's all happening very quickly.
Yeah, and I think Gaddafi's threats here forced the UN and the US to really take action, because just a couple days ago, the US was not in favor of a no-fly zone. So we saw some quick action and the international community intensifying its activity on behalf of the Libyan rebels. So this is big, but I think at the same time, we have to understand Gaddafi is still moving forward and he still has most of the country under his control. So the rebels are facing an uphill battle. And it's good that the international community now is going to put essentially a buffer zone around Benghazi. But the question is, what happens after that? Because the goal of the rebels is clear, to move all the way to the west and oust Gaddafi. So the question is, will the military intervention be enough and sustained enough to allow the rebels to continue moving forward and get what they ultimately want?
Does that mean that your question there also is, does the buffer zone move as the rebels, if they can, move forward into pro-Gaddafi positions?
That's the big question here. It's not entirely clear. If you look at a lot of the rhetoric coming from the various nations on the Security Council, they keep on talking about protection of civilians, but they're not explicitly saying that the goal is to move to the west and oust Gaddafi. I mean, that said, the resolution does authorize all necessary action short of occupation. So that does allow the international community to go well beyond no-fly zones and conduct targeted airstrikes against Gaddafi's forces really anywhere in Libya.
How do you react to Mark Kimmett's comments that we just heard from Washington, talking about the fact that now that these governments have to go back and talk more about how they logistically going to sort this all out? You'd think that would have been done first before this resolution in some shape or form, because as everybody's been saying, time is of the essence, and these civilians that we can see now in Benghazi in the central south could be attacked at any time.
Sure, I mean, the time for talking is over. I mean, there's been dithering back and forth for the last 3 weeks, and this is, a lot of people are worried that this is too little too late, and now with the threat of Gaddafi moving in, the U.S. and its allies can't wait really more than 24 hours. They have been planning, though, as Mark Kimmett did say. It's not as if they woke up this morning and said, oh, we have to organize a military operation. There's been contingency planning going on for quite some time now, and it seems that the various parts are in place to move right now.
Indeed, if we don't even look at the Americans taking the lead, we had Alain Juppé, the French foreign minister, speaking to us on Al Jazeera. He also spoke in the council chamber at the UN. And he was saying that France was willing to take the lead along with Britain and Lebanon. The issue really is how these nations coordinate their response, because they want to make sure they do it as an international group, including the Arab nations. And we're getting possible rumours that a couple of Arab nations might get involved. They haven't been named, but we don't know that yet.
That's good. I mean, Arab cooperation is important. That said, they don't really add a lot in terms of military capability. It's mostly there for symbolic reasons. The important thing, though, is that the Arab League did strongly support a no-fly zone, and that allowed, I think, the UN Security Council to act more decisively. So the Arab world is on board, the Libyan rebels are on board, really the entire world except for a few abstaining nations.
How important is it that, you know, we talk about the time length that's required to get things moving, but we've got a resolution now that's been passed. We've got people there that need protecting, and it's just hard to believe that we just have to sort of sit around for a little while longer. What can be done, if anything, in the short term, do you think, from governments or from a military perspective that might actually help these people or certainly protect them for the moment?
Well, I think they just have to get the military operation moving, and it's difficult to know exactly how long that will take. There have been different reports. But I think everyone realizes the urgency here, that you can't really wait that much longer because Gaddafi could be coming in. And these Western governments do have intelligence that will tell them whether or not Gaddafi is starting to move towards Benghazi. So I think a lot of it will depend on how they perceive what Gaddafi is doing on his end.
How do you interpret his threats that he'll fight back, that if the Security Council, as it has done now, the international community imposes sanctions and a no-fly zone, he's not going to just lie down and take it? Because now we're getting word through the wires that Libya says the UN resolution threatens the unity of the nation.
Well, we know what Gaddafi wants to do here. He's been very clear about this from the very beginning. He is going to fight to the very last drop of blood. This is not someone who's going to go quietly into the night and, you know, get a villa in Venezuela. That's not what we're talking about here. So, I mean, we're talking about a difficult foe. And unfortunately, what that means in practice is that he either has to be captured or killed, either by the rebels or people around him or by airstrikes. And I think people have to be aware of what that means and where the end game is here. He's not going anywhere.
We shall see where he does go and what he does next. Shadi Hamid, thanks very much. Certainly a momentous night for Libyans across their country. And, of course, we've been seeing those pictures live here on Al Jazeera. Now, even before the UN vote, the US Secretary of State said a no-fly zone would also require bombing targets inside Libya.